Now, this is all in a sense, by the way, though it does illustrate this general principle of non-exploitation, that one shouldn't use people or pander to people in this way. But we may say that one of the commonest fields of exploitation in the whole range of human life is the economic. We find in the economic sphere that employers exploit employees if they can, and vice versa. The employees exploit the employers. And we tend to think that this is a rather modern sort of problem. Relationships between capital and labour, employer and employee, between office and factory, and so on. But it's interesting to find that the Buddha himself has given a considerable attention to this matter. There's a very famous sutta or discourse of the Buddha in the Digha Nikaya. This particular sutta is called the Sigalavada Sutta. A Sigala was a young Brahmin of the Buddha's day, and avada means advice. So it's the sutta of the Buddha's advice to the young Brahmin Sigala. And in this particular sutta, the Buddha has laid down a sort of pattern of relationships for different kinds of persons. He has explained what should be the relationship, for instance, between father and son. What should be the relationship between friend and friend? What should be the relationship between husband and wife? And also he has explained in some detail what should be the relationship between employer and employee. All this is set forth with great clarity and succinctness, and it is of considerable interest to us today. The Buddha says there are five duties of the employer towards the employee, and five duties of the employee towards the employer. This gives us a sort of Buddhist code of economic ethics, we may say, of capital and labour relationships. First of all, the five duties of the employer. The Buddha says, the employer must give the employee work according to his bodily and mental strength. Give him the sort of work he can do without injury to himself. Now, I'm sorry to say that this principle is not observed in India today. Though the Buddha gave this instruction 25 centuries ago, it is not observed in India today. Now, you can see in India today, unfortunately, hundreds of thousands of people who earn their living as coolies. A coolie is just an ordinary labourer who carries a great load on his back, or rather on his head, from place to place. And these people are the poorest of the poor and the lowest of the low, as anybody who has been to India will know. And they usually manage to earn about 2 rupees a day, which is about half a crown a day. And on that they have to live and support themselves and their families. But what you very often see is that a well-to-do merchant, say, will hire a number of coolies, say, to carry bags, carry sacks of rice. Now, he may get a very thin, weak, old coolie who can just about stagger along with a small bag. But if the employer, if the merchant, allows him just to carry a small bag, that will mean he'll take double the time to do the job. Instead of the job, say, lasting one day, it'll last 2 days, and he'll have to give the man 2 days' wages. So he loads him double. So you see the wretched coolie staggering along under a load which he has no business to be carrying at all. You see the veins standing out. You see the muscles absolutely stretched like whipcord, and the perspiration streaming down. And this can be a very, very pitiable sight. But this is the sort of thing which one sees every day in India, that the coolie and the ordinary workman is given work to do, loads to carry, far in excess of his strength. It's the same with the rickshaw pullers. They're trying to do away with them now, but formerly the life of the rickshaw puller wasn't more than a few years. They started pulling rickshaws when they were 15 or 16. By the time they were 25, they were finished. Well, they usually had TB, and you see them spitting blood, and that would be the end of them within a few months. Because at the same time that they were doing this work, they had a minimum sort of diet, no proper nutrition, so the work quite literally killed them. But no one bothered. I remember the first time I was in Ceylon, and I took a ride in a rickshaw, rather against my will, I was quite horrified, and I kept telling the coolie to go slower, because it seemed so terrible that he should be pulling me along at top speed, obviously a great injury to himself. But he didn't understand what I was saying, and he thought I was telling him, as anybody else would have done, to go faster. So the more I said go slower, the more he went faster. So in the end I just had to stop. But thereafter I used a rickshaw only when I absolutely had to, in some sort of emergency, and trying usually to pick someone fairly strong and sturdy and not make him go very, very quickly. You can't stop using them altogether because they've got no means of livelihood apart from pulling the rickshaw. So this is the sort of thing which is done even now in India, probably hardly at all in Western countries, but this is the sort of thing which happens in the East very, very much, that people are given work, given labour, far in excess of their strength, so that they're quite literally, in the long run, killed by it. So it's very, very significant that the Buddha, so many centuries ago, laid down this precept that the employer should give the employee work according to his bodily and mental strength. Secondly, the Buddha said, the employer should give food and sufficient pay. This is still the custom in India. If you employ someone, you give them food, you give them clothes, plus some cash. It's not usually a salary. So here, the operative principle is give food and sufficient pay, that is, sufficient to meet the needs. Sufficient to enable the employee to live decently as a human being. Not sufficient in relation to the work done. There shouldn't be, as I said earlier, on any correlation between the amount of work done and the amount of pay received. We've got accustomed to thinking in these terms, so much work done, therefore so much pay received. But it shouldn't really be like this at all. The employee should work as faithfully as he can, and the employer should give him simply what he needs for a good and decent human life. Not a minimum, not just a bare subsistence, not what he needs in that sense, but what he needs for a full and adequate and decent human life. I read in a paper recently that the suggestion had been made that on the attainment of majority, every man and woman in this country should be given by the state a sort of basic stipend, just enough for food, clothing and shelter, regardless of whether they worked or not. This seemed to me quite an excellent idea. And the idea was, further, that anybody who wanted more than this, who wanted to buy a car or a radio or a television set, they should have to work. That you should have to work only for luxuries, but that the necessities of life were provided to everybody free. And I'm quite sure that we could work out some sort of system of this kind. If you wanted to study and meditate, well, you could. You draw your £3 or £5 a week from the state and make do with that. If you wanted more, you'd have to work. There would probably be quite a number of people who would want more, who would love to work, but no doubt quite a number also, especially Buddhists, would be quite content, I hope, to live very, very simply, without a radio, without a television set, without all those other wonderful things, but without having to work, devoting themselves entirely to Buddhism, like a sort of vast secular sangha or monastic order of one kind or another. Anyway, the basic principle here is that the employee should get what he needs, quite apart from the actual amount of work done. Even if he's very weak and can do very little work, he should still get what he needs fully. And even if he's strong and healthy and his output, his turnover is enormous, he shouldn't get extra. He should just get what he needs by way of remuneration. Thirdly, the Buddha says, the employer should give the employee medical treatment and support after retirement. Now look at this principle. 2,500 years ago, this was enunciated, that the employer should continue to look after the employee even when he was no longer working, either due to age or to sickness, should continue to support him, continue to pay him, and continue to allow for his medical treatment. You could hardly have anything better than that, even in the welfare state. Fourthly, the Buddha says, the employer should share with the employee any extras. In other words, if the employer that year makes an extra profit, share it with the employee. Let him also participate in it. It shouldn't be kept only for the employer. In other words, the principle of bonus. Fifthly and lastly, it is the duty, the Buddha said, of the employer to grant the employee holidays and special allowances. That's a very modern ring, doesn't it? Holidays and special allowances. So these are the five rules, the five precepts laid down by the Buddha for the guidance of the employer in relationship to the employee. But the employee also has certain duties. It isn't one-sided. There are five duties for the employee also.